Past 11 years, the collective market cap of the so-called Magnificent Seven stocks, those are Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, Meta, Microsoft, Nvidia, and Tesla, has grown from just over $1 trillion US dollars to well over $13 trillion US dollars. Now, today we saw the Bank of America fund manager survey show that upbeat investors rushed into emerging market equities in March at the fastest pace since April of 2017, and also into Eurozone stocks at the quickest clip since June of 2020. March did see outflows from US equities, particularly from discretionary and tech stocks. However, the long Magnificent Seven trade remained the most crowded. Are the Magnificent Seven valuations justifiable? I guess that's the million-dollar question, with Andrew Ditburner, Chief Investment Officer at Private Clients by Old Mutual Wealth. Andrew, welcome. Considering that rise that we've seen in the M7 over the last 11 years, what are the key factors that you think have underpinned most significantly this exponential growth?
Thanks, Michael. Good evening. Yeah, so I think... The key factor that underpins it is the narrative, I suppose, around, you know, artificial intelligence. And I mean, the Magnificent Seven, the investment community seem to be wonderful at coming up with these acronyms for businesses. And the Magnificent Seven was born during the course of last year. And obviously that was on the back of, you know, artificial intelligence, these generative AI models, ChatGPT being the first one. And now, you know, the thoughts or the story around, you know, how this is going to change the world. You know, and we've seen this sort of story before, obviously in the early 2000s, late 99. And I suppose we've got to try and disseminate, I suppose, you know, between a good story and bad valuations. And I suppose that is the question that you ask is, you know, are these Magnificent Seven valuations justifiable? You know, if you compare, go back to 99, you know, the internet taking over the world, and you just had to put a .com in the end of your name, and your share price rose astronomically on the back of that. You know, today, I think if you look at the Magnificent Seven companies that soon might become the, I don't know, the Super Six or what the next acronym will be, as Tesla seems to fall famous by the five, wayside. Yeah. Or the famous five. Yeah, there we go. But these companies are actually very profitable businesses. You know, they are generating, you know, a significant amount of cash flow that allows them to invest back in their businesses. Their earnings are doing, you know, phenomenally well. They're driving top line growth. So I think a slightly different story to what we saw, you know, 25 years ago.
Which makes answering that question all the more difficult, doesn't it? Back in 99s, 2000, as you say, many of these companies were not free cash flow generative at all. Many of them were just being hyped up on the back of this new thing that was called the internet and dial-up modems, and we can still remember the sound that those used to make. But these are many of them very established, dominant tech giants in their respective verticals, be it in chip manufacturing or social media or search or whatever it is. Yeah. So how do you go about answering that question around valuation? Because if you had been at the investment forum 12 months ago, the big theme was US recession. There were three big ones that I remember: US recession, China was going to bounce from COVID, and South Africa's stocks were undervalued. Well, I mean, we continue to remain undervalued. China didn't rebound. It's still pretty much the sick man of the global economy. But the big surprise was the US and how resilient it was. So if you had piled out of tech stocks because you were fearful of the US going into recession, you would have been hurt. I mean, these are difficult questions to answer.
Yeah, so exactly. So, you know, because these businesses are very different to the ones 25 years ago, as you state, it does become, you know, incredibly difficult. And you've got to try and, you know, work out in your mind whether you believe that, you know, what the market is pricing from on a forward-looking basis, you know, trying to get a sense of what are these companies going to generate from earnings growth going forward, and is that realistic? And I suppose, you know, that's the key question. So, you know, Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, at their recent results said, you know, artificial intelligence is at a tipping point, you know, and what he means by that is, you know, where we are right now, I think 40-50% of NVIDIA's business goes to these superscalers, which are, you know, your the likes of your Googles, Microsofts, you know, those sorts of Amazon, those sorts of businesses providing cloud services. And now he says, well, that it's at a tipping point in terms of, well, how's the rest of the world, you know, going to adopt this technology? You know, I can speak for ourselves at work. We're thinking about and looking at different artificial intelligence programs that will help our business. And, you know, if that really picks up or that takes off, as Jensen Huang believes it will, you know, then it might have, you know, the story might have some room to run, you know. the party might be ending at 4:30 in the morning, and we've got to decide if we're at 4 a.m. or if we're at 10 p.m. right now. You know, but if you just look at the value, at the earnings expectations that we've calculated, you know, in terms of what the market's pricing, you know, some do seem fairly optimistic. NVIDIA right at the top of that. You know, by our calculations, the market expects NVIDIA to be able to grow its earnings at around about 23% per annum over the next 10 years. Now, not too many businesses, you know, have ever been able to do that, let alone the third biggest business in the world. So, you know, that, you know, maybe not completely outside the realms of reality, but certainly topish if you think about, you know, how big the business is and being able to generate that sort of earnings growth. Yeah. But then you take, you know, you look at a Microsoft or an Apple, for instance, you know, and the market expects earnings of in the high single digits. You know, that is not, you know, overly demanding. So I think when thinking about these Magnificent Seven businesses, rather than approaching them as a collective and looking at them, you know, as one, I think if you look at them individually, you know, they might you might reach different conclusions for different businesses.
Yeah, they are. Listen, we like the acronyms in the financial industry. Too many TLAs, but they're all very different businesses. Ultimately, when you do a deep due diligence into them, and that's why you really have to assess each one on its merits. Very interesting earnings call that from Jensen Huang. His clip on resilience has gone viral when he was chatting to students at MIT, saying, "I wish upon you suffering." And he wasn't joking. He means grit and resilience. And so, as an investor, I think sometimes you might have to develop a bit of your own grit and resilience to resist the knee jerk when you see how concentrated the market is, not to sell at 10 and miss the best part of the party, which, as we know, always goes in after midnight. and I think that's always the difficulty here. But when you look at the kind of overarching principles or guidelines that you would offer to investors to try and make an informed decision here, I mean, when I see this kind of concentration, I get nervous, Andrew, and I think, well, what is the market missing in the other 493 odd? And surely there might be a better opportunity with higher margins of safety in, say, a pharma company that's developing a new diabetes drug, for example, or, you know, weight loss drugs seem to be the big one at the moment. And that's going to be necessary for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And it's probably being undervalued given how much concentration we see in these stocks. How do you view it?
Yeah, no, exactly. So the problem that, you know, the similarity, the differences between where we were, you know, 25 years ago and this, you know, one of the similarities is that the market's becoming more and more concentrated. And we are very aware of, you know, of that situation in South Africa with the NASPA story through the 2010s. Ultimately, what you want is money to be flowing to businesses that are generating high or increasing returns on invested capital, and not companies that are just, you know, large and going high, you know, attracting capital because their share prices continue to go up, effectively momentum. That virtuous cycle at some point comes to an end, as we learn. So, you know, look at places where money's flowing away. You know, Japan was very unloved for a long time. You know, Buffett went in there a couple of years ago and suddenly money started flowing, and look how well that did. You know, Europe's a similar case in point today, and you mentioned the other 493 companies in the S&P 500. You know, those companies didn't go anywhere through the course of last year. Effectively, these seven businesses carried the whole market. So there are most definitely opportunities in other places, you know, outside of these businesses. Not to say that, you know, these businesses won't keep doing fantastically well, that perhaps or very well may do. But there's most definitely places that money's been flown away from. You mentioned China earlier is a case in point. And that still have great businesses. that investors seem to have ignored. So, you know, and we've now just recently, talking about acronyms, I see Goldman Sachs came out with the granolas, which are the big European businesses. You know, some have done well. You mentioned the weight loss drugs. You know, that you've got the likes of Novo Nordisk there that's done exceptionally well. But again, there are other parts of that market that that really haven't featured.
Yeah.
So there's definitely opportunity out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question right at the end again. Are the valuations justifiable given what we've just discussed?
In places. As I say, if you look at them on a case-by-case basis, you know, I mentioned Microsoft and Apple not priced on very demanding expectations. But in other places, you know, they do look a bit toppy. I think I alluded to those earlier.
Fantastic. There you have it. Andrew Ditburn, a Chief Investment Officer at Private Clients by Old Mutual Wealth, talking about probably one of the most vexing concentration issues in the market at the moment on whether or not the M7 valuations are justifiable here on Classic Business.